Well, welcome to the situation report for Monday, August 12th. This has been yet another 45 minutes of cursory IT setup. Can't get the Twitter feed to work. Can't get the camera to work. Can't get my mic to work. Just another day in paradise. It's not a good sit rep or roundtable without 30 minutes of cursory IT setup for just about everything. So I guess we're not streaming to Twitter tonight for whatever reason. Because that's not working. Interesting. Trump is on with Elon Musk right now, and that's created a, you know, basically a firestorm of noise in the system. So that's going on right now, and I'm sure that's why Twitter's probably hosed, is because of that. But it is what it is. The interesting news over the weekend was this lack of an Iranian attack. And it blew up my phone over the weekend. People were asking me all kinds of questions around, you know, should we be concerned? Should we be paying attention to what's going on over there? Let me just start out by saying that, number one, lose the fear. Because what we're watching is a tectonic fight between oligarchs and people at the very top. There is literally nothing we can do about that. There's no conflict space there where you can tell the good guy from the bad guy. And no matter how this shakes out, because everybody knows something big is coming. What that big is, what that event looks like, nobody's going to know until you're in the moment. And I've had tons of feedback. So let me address the feedback I've gotten. Because my weekend was just full of text messages. And look, everybody is frustrated. Everyone. Guys in the round table, all my military friends, people I know in the system, they're all very, very frustrated. And it's because everybody wants to go on the offensive. They want to go after whoever the enemy is. So people want to take the fight to the enemy. I get it. But until we can organize at the local level and start building a grassroots movement from the ground up, where there's actual unity against what's going on, and guess what? It's not really going to matter what we do. Just like it's not going to matter what it looks like for the enemy. We're going to react to the situation. We're going to pivot and have to come together at that time. We had several conversations over the last week about getting people organized. And here's the bottom line. Until people are uncomfortable enough to start looking for an alternative to what they're living through, they're not going to do anything. And people have to be very uncomfortable for that to happen. As much as I want to say, yeah, things are great. Things are going to work out. Everybody's coming together. They're not. And that's the cold, hard truth of the situation. You talk about kicking doors all you want, but you don't know who the enemy is. They could be right next door and you would never know it. Look like you, talk like you, act like you, get along with you, agree with you, but really, they're the enemy. And there's, you know, how many flavors of the enemy? There's the pink hair, blue hair extremists. There's the gender identity, gender affirming extremists. There's a host of demographics out there that, let's just face it, they're easy to identify. But it is what it is. And as much as you want to go out there and kick doors, bust heads, until we have a coherent group of people working together, and this is at the local level, there's not a hell of a lot you're going to be able to do at the national level. This grassroots has to start with each and every one of you in your community, building it, building, you know, your sphere of influence and increasing your line of sight through building community. That's really hard to do right now because people are reserved, they're scared, they're frustrated. They're at the edge of poverty because of the cost of living right now. It's very, very hard. But you got to get out there, get away from your keyboard. You got to make human connections. I made a bunch today, and I was just out and about. But you have to make those connections at the local level. Got to stop waiting for the national level stuff to work. Got to stop waiting for these massive shifts to happen. Live your life and, you know, make human connections and continue to prepare for whatever's coming. Although I will say that the funniest one I got this weekend was the whole Planet X thing. If you haven't heard about Planet X, let me bring you up to speed, because this has been around for like 30 years, all the way back to Bill Cooper, who wrote Behold a Pale Horse. I mean, that was the first book that talked about moon bases and alien ships, reverse engineer. It blew a lot of things out of the water, right, when it came out. So Planet X, and this is not a bust on Navy guys, even though I could spend all day doing that. But a bunch of Navy guys, they're all sub guys, nuke sub guys, got together and said that this Planet X is gonna come close to Earth, and there's gonna be two suns, and our orbit's gonna change. There's gonna be this cataclysmic event that happens on Earth. But if you stay and live in the Ozarks, you'll be okay. How they figured all that out from all of this, I don't know. But the running joke was, move to the Ozarks, you'll be good for anything you want. So that made its rounds today. And why all this is important is everybody's looking for a source of truth. Everybody's looking for the source of information that they can trust, they can dig into, and they can get solid, actionable information from. And that doesn't exist right now. You have to get it from a variety of sources. Substack's one. I continually reference the Washington Pundit, not the Gateway Pundit, the Washington Pundit. Dr. EC and Adam Carter do a great job of putting out factual information that they can verify. There's also Revolver.News. They use a leverage a lot of Substack journalists that are actually doing journalism. That's a good source of information. And then there's a variety of Substacks that you can subscribe to that will give you a bunch of information. So, you know, the thing to remember here is that you're looking for corroboration of stories. You're not looking for the exclusive story. You're looking for a variety of stories that leverage different information to give you the ground truth of what's really going on. And sometimes it's usually in the middle. I want to read something that I took out of Joe Dolio's book. I'm rereading Joe Dolio's baseline training manual from his Tactical Wisdom series. It's book one. And he talks about effects-based operations, right? And one of the best examples of explaining first and second order of effects, and by the way, I'm answering a question here. Somebody talked to me about effect, you know, first and second order effects. Why do I keep referencing that? Well, I keep referencing that because when you start talking about effects, you have to start thinking deeper than just there was a tornado and my house was blown away, right? So when a tornado hits, and this is from his book, when a tornado hits, the destruction is the first order effect. That destruction causes a power outage, which is the second order effect. The power outage means stores are closed and food spoils, making food storage a third order effect, food shortage a third order effect. Another third order effect in this scenario is that you live in a place where the municipal water supply pumps will lose power and your water will not be safe to drink. So water storage becomes a third order effect. And then the fourth order effect is the sickness, dysentery, et cetera, that comes out of bad water. And that to me is a good explanation of why we, you know, all of us talk about effects, first, second, third order effects. That's why we talk about it, is to get you to think about situations in a structured way. If X happens and they take out a power station, What does that power? Does it power the water system? Does it power the sewer system? Do they have to pump the sewer to a higher level because we're at a lower elevation? You have to think through all those things in a contingency, because most people don't. You only think through what's in front of you. You don't think through all those other second, third, fourth order effects, because you're so focused on what's in front of you. And, you know, I referenced Lawrence Gonzalez's book along Deep Survival a lot for a very simple reason, because it's the any contingency situation is about level-headed decision-making and keeping calm in the midst of chaos and keeping grounded. And he goes through a meticulous study of a number of different deep survival situations where people literally have survived the worst elements. And if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, he goes right down the hierarchy of needs, and he gets to the core issue, which is basic survival instinct depends on one very key element, and that's your mindset. Keeping your mind focused on what's in front of you and making cool, calm decisions, solving one problem at a time, and chances are you're going to get to go home. Now, I'm not saying that that's the situation that we're going to face, given all of the indicators that are in front of us right now. But you should be prepared for that kind of a situation, because we never know what's going to happen. If you're looking at what's going on in Israel right now, they have done everything they can do to drive provocation to an absolute breaking point. And we may see Iran retaliate. We may see them wait out. It's hard to say. But they're talking about troop movements they haven't seen in years in Israel right now. And that's a considerable indicator that Iran is actually going to do something. And get away from the bigger picture. It doesn't just mean the first order effects in this situation are going to be a kinetic fight between Hezbollah, Iran, and Israel, and probably other Arab countries. That's the first order. The second order is going to be cyber strikes in all the Western countries supporting Israel, specifically the United States, by a bunch of threat actors. Second order effects are also going to be kinetic operations by special forces from those countries here in the U.S. So you can see how the second and third order effects are starting to develop just from the ripple effect from that kinetic activity if it takes place in Israel. So you want to be cognizant of that, and you want to be planning ahead. That means make sure your radios are charged up. Make sure you have a first aid kit. Make sure you know how to use your first aid kit. Make sure you have food and water. Make sure you have ammo. Make sure your weapons are clean. Make sure your weapons are stored. All of those things. Because I firmly believe that we are on the event horizon right now. And we have been on the event horizon for several months now. And part of what we've seen is the continuation of this back and forth yin and yang of who's going to blink first. And regardless of how you view the situation from the global perspective, this is a global phenomenon that we're watching right now. That will continue until somebody blinks. And then it'll be like a powder keg once that first action happens. And I'm not talking about a skirmish on the Syrian border or the Lebanese border. I'm talking about something that kicks off a wider conflict, real kinetic action, head-to-head kinetic action that will drive a number of responses that will be autonomic, not planned. And that's typically what we call the fog of war. You have very, very limited indicators, and you're making a lot of different decisions based on what you think those indicators mean. You've studied the intent of the enemy. You've studied the enemy's array of forces across the battlefield. You've studied their disposition. You know what their center of mass is. You know what their, and what I'm speaking to right now is intelligence preparation of the battlefield. Both sides have done that in both Israel Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, Egypt, they've all done IPB. And the reason why it's important that we're talking about it is that everybody's done the analysis now. They're watching to see what the disposition of forces are at the current moment, and they're waiting for that ideal point to strike. And once that kicks off, there's going to be a bunch of actions that happen after that are going to be completely unpredictable. And it's that situation that I'm talking about, because that will bleed over here quickly. And it may mean communication outages, power outages, water outages, logistical outages. You can run the gamut, and it could be all of them at once. And what I'm trying to get everybody to get on board with is lose the fear. There's nothing to be afraid of, because when your number's up, your number's up. There's no outrunning it. There's no stepping right or left to dodge it. Your number's up, your number's up. I saw that both, I've seen that so many times, but it was so graphic in front of me in Iraq. Air Force Master Sergeant was just getting out of the shower when 120 millimeter mortars were coming in our camp. And he stepped inside of one of the bomb shelters, and he literally had his forehead peeking out to see if the rounds were coming closer. And I don't know why he did it, but literally that 2 inches of his forehead took shrapnel and it killed him instantly. The odds of that are astronomical. But that should tell you that when your number's up, your number's up. So stop being afraid of it. It is what it is. And it's not like we don't all have life plans anyway. We all have plans that we're supposed to fulfill. And maybe the next order of battle is that we see our country reborn. That sure is what it looks like. But I get this overwhelming sense that things are going to suck for a while, and then we're going to come out of this a stronger, hardened nation. It's going to be better off than where we were before. And anything's better than this, this lunacy that we see every single day. Anything's better than this. And so many different levels that you can pick to go after. Everything would be better if we got rid of the mainstream media. We did away and revamped the court system. We did away with the public school system and went back to a standard curriculum and got rid of Common Core. I mean, there's a number of things we could do to change our society and pivot our society right now. But we have a number of systemic things we're going to have to deal with as we're going through this. And that's why I say it's going to harden a lot of people. The point is, get prepared now, because you may not get another chance. And tune out the noise. The election is noise. The conflict that's going on in Ukraine, noise. The economy, that's real. But the economic system behind the economy, all manipulated, complete noise. So as you start going down to the so what test of, so what do I care about? The things you care about right now is watching and paying attention to what's going on in your community, putting your phone down and keeping situational awareness around where you are and what you're doing. I make it a point now that when I get out of my car, no matter what I'm doing, no matter where I'm at, I am heads up looking around all the time. My vigilance is up all the time. And I don't spend any time in my phone wherever I'm at. And you literally have to operate in that place, right? And Joe's got five conditions: white, yellow, orange, red, and black. And the reason why I'm referencing Joe's book is that you have some of the industry experts that are on the roundtable right now. and every one of them brings something different to the fight. In this case, you know, Joe's got five books on just baseline training for contingencies. So most people should be at either white means you're unprepared, unready to take action. Yellow means you're prepared, alert, relaxed, and you have good situational awareness. Orange means you're alert to probable danger and ready to take action. Red means you're in action mode and you're focused on taking action. Black means you panic, drop your weapons, and shit your pants. Everybody should be in condition yellow right now. You should be looking around, alert to your surroundings. You should be paying attention to who's there. You should be, more importantly, paying attention to who belongs there. And you shouldn't be bashful about asking people, what are you doing here? I do it in my neighborhood all the time because there's people that transit through here all the time. And I have a significant Taiwanese population in my neighborhood now. So I'm very, very vigilant. And you should be too, especially in public spaces right now, because you have no idea who's there, what their intent is, and you should be eyes on all the time, especially if you're with your kids. And you should be ready to exit the conflict zone as fast as possible. And one thing that Joe calls on the book, which I had forgotten about, that they drill into your head is when you're doing, this is a FEMA thing too. They drill into your head when you walk into a building, eyeball the exits, figure out where the exits are. Because most people, when they hit condition black, they panic and they head towards the same exit they came to. There could be an exit 2 feet away, but they end up dying because they're trying to go to the original exit and they're all hunched together trying to get out the same door. Not everybody can get out. And I've heard that example used like 5 times today. So that tells me a lot of people think that there's something big coming, some kind of a contingency. So situational awareness should be first and foremost your priority anytime you leave your house. Anytime you're outside in your neighborhood, you should be paying attention. Take nothing for granted, nothing. Because if you do, that'll be the second that you die. And then the other piece is we've talked about training. And I'm working right now to see if I could get a training class here in Phoenix in September. And if I can, that'll be an opportunity for some of you to actually come here and train with us, because I'm going to be in that class. And I'm going to, and I joke with the guys, because I've asked Chris from Combat Studies Group to lead the course. This isn't a gun skills course. This is unfuck the colonel and unfuck his gear over a week-long period and reteach him the combat skills that he's atrophied in. So it'll be a 5-day course if we can get all the pieces put together. And it'll be here in Phoenix, probably North Phoenix. So we'll put together, if you're coming from out of state, we'll put together a gear list, et cetera, as well as accommodations, places to stay. But this is an opportunity to do some training. And I highly suggest that if you can do it and swing it, you do. Because the three skills that most people atrophy in, and I am guilty of this just like everybody else, is I've done Combat Lifesaver twice now, 2 or 3 times. And I can tell you that I couldn't do an IV right now to save my life. I could probably do, clear somebody's airway. I could probably muddle my way through a collapsed lung. But the medical skills, the shooting skills, the escape and evasion skills, situational awareness training, all those things matter. And all those are perishable skills. You have to constantly hone your skill set in order to be in a place where when you are in condition red, you can actually take action and think clearly about what you're going to do, and you can estimate the situation effectively. I can tell you that I am, my skills have atrophied a lot, even my shooting skills. So I'm in a renewed interest to, and I'm, the other thing I'm doing too, is I'm going to go and get current my flying skills and get back to flying on a regular basis. So my flying skills are current. All of those things matter. You can't do everything. So pick the things you can do and do the things you can do. But if you can do training, now's the time. Take advantage of it. Because all these guys do training courses. And look, it's not a competition to see who the cool guy is. You're out there to learn. Eat your ego, check your ego at the door and walk in the door and learn something. Because I can tell you, you know, I'm a combat vet. Most of these guys are combat vets. Everybody's got a different experience in combat. And I can tell you that even now, all these years removed from it, I'd be ate up if I went back to a combat zone. I'd be ate up. And it's because I haven't trained like that. I've been doing keeping up on shooting. I've been doing regular shooting drills. I've been doing regular cycling weapons, cleaning weapons, you know, on the gunsmith side of the house. But I haven't been out working on SA. That's a perishable skill. So when you think about what you're going to do next, my advice is make a list, write down a list of the things that you need to do, things that you want to do, and prioritize them by budget, by time, etc. And I did that exercise over the weekend, went through bug out bags, went through gear lists, and I had to take a step back because it wasn't my gear and let the person that I was working with go through their gear and their system. It's very hard to do, right? Because I've got all this experience studying all these things up and using this stuff for real. So I know exactly what it looks like, and I've forgotten what it looks like to be a novice at this and not having done this and having to think through these things. And I had the luxury of having combat veterans that had been in country before I went, get me sorted before I went over there. And so I have all this experience that I want to share, but I have to remember what it was like to be in that situation. This training course will give you that. It will give you ways to set up your gear that will be more advantageous to you. It will give you ability to shoot and move and communicate. So there's a lot of advantages to it. So keep it in mind as we get more details around it, if we can put it all together, I'll put it out there. So, if you can take advantage of it, great. Please do. And again, it'll be an opportunity to train with us. So you'll get to see that, people aren't the experts you think they are. Because this situation is like any other situation, right? You make up this picture in your head about what it's going to look like and how things are going to go. And then you get on the ground, you realize it doesn't go that way. Right? It's like land navigation and maps, working with maps. I guarantee you there's probably one in 50 that's in the chat listening to this right now that actually knows how to use a compass. And any military guy will tell you that land navigation is one of the hardest pieces to do, even for infantry guys. And it's a perishable skill. You have to use it over and over and over again. And it gives you peace of mind that you can dead reckon, you can land navigate, or you can navigate from the air. And that's one thing one of the skills that's atrophied for me is dead reckoning in the air. I used to be exceptional at it. I could go anywhere in Washington, Oregon, or Idaho. In an airplane, I could tell you exactly where I was at any one time. I could look at the sectional, look at the ground, and figure out where I was at without looking at the compass. That's a skill set that you have to hone and use all the time. And I guarantee you, most people probably have a really high speed compass, don't know how to use it. So that's another thing I'm going to be working on over the next several weeks. And I suggest you start looking at that too. As well as going through your gear and figuring out what stuff you need to get rid of, what stuff you need to update, what stuff is not going to be useful, all of that. And you don't have to be a master at land navigation. You just have to understand how to read a map. Because assume that GPS goes down for whatever reason. And look, I'll give you a perfect example. I got a $750 Garmin in there with the screen, the messaging, all the satellite links. It won't charge past 40%. And it's maybe 6 months old. So what does that tell you? It tells you the technology, even in its best form, can crap itself. Yep, still 33%. Been at 33% for 2 days now. So the battery's toast. $800. That's why you go through your gear. So you can figure out what stuff works and what stuff doesn't. Yeah, 29%. It's frustrating, but that's why you go through your gear. So hopefully most of this helps. It'll give you at least a direction of which way to go. And we'll talk more about it on Wednesday, because we're going to talk through some of the basic concepts in the book and talk through situational awareness, analyzing situations. We're going to talk about, because we talked about the technology aspect of it, right? Technology is one of our Achilles heels. Let's face it, one of our Achilles heels. And I'm going to use the words I was trying not to. TikTok. I'm telling you, TikTok. If you have it on your phone, your phone's compromised. If you have WhatsApp on your phone's compromised. If you've ever had WhatsApp on your phone, which I have, you're compromised. And if you do anything on your phone that is related to well, let's just say banking, any other kind of information, they got it. And you have to account for that now. Get a burner phone. In fact, I have a burner phone that somebody sent me, which cracks me up, called Punkt, P-U-N-K-T. And it cracks me up because I've never used this thing, but somebody sent it to me and said, hey, this thing's completely free of any spyware. Well, that's because it's just a keyboard and a small screen. You pretty much smile and dial with a burner card, and you throw it away. So you should have technology around you that's clean, and good security hygiene means that you don't put anything on it that you don't need. Like, if you're going to bank on your phone, keep your banking stuff on your phone, but keep the social media stuff. And I do social media, Rumble and et cetera, on a machine I know that I don't care about. And I browse all kinds of different websites that I know are monitored, if not owned by the intelligence agencies. And I don't do anything on that laptop that would give them any kind of grounds to do anything. But every search you do, everything you browse, they're paying attention to, especially right now, especially with what's going on in Europe. And I'll talk about London or the Britain thing in just a second. But my point about bringing up technology is it's an Achilles heel for just about everybody. So don't rely on technology. Get back to pencil, paper, compass, and rudimentary navigation. And pay attention to the tech you are buying and the tech you are using, because it gives up. And here's a perfect example. I have one of the newer Broncos. I have a 23 Bronco. I ordered the damn thing in like 2020, and it took 4 or 3 years to get the damn thing here. Every time I go out to that thing, there's some piece of technology that's transmitted. First of all, there's like 10 cameras on it. So it's always taking pictures of where you are. Second of all, it's got Wi-Fi embedded in the chipset in the truck. So the only way to disable it is to pull the breaker. But you have to figure out what else goes with the breaker besides the Wi-Fi. And in my case, you pop the breaker and it takes out like six different systems. You could go into the software and hack things to turn it off, but they can remotely turn it back on. So get used to having things around you that are analog, that are not susceptible to remote intervention. Most people don't even think about that. You don't think about the security aspects of that. And having even a piece of shit 87 Chevy pickup, I'm telling you, that thing is probably going to be a lifesaver. And I'll tell you why. Because number one, it's probably not the most reliable vehicle you have, but you can run aviation gas in it. You can run regular gas in it. You can run ethanol in it. You can basically get to everything in the motor when you open the hood. You don't have to dig things out. You can do things on the side of the road that you can't do in a new car. You don't have any of the electronic issues that you do now. You basically have a manual switch, an analog switch for your headlights, an analog switch for your ignition. And the only thing you have to worry about is electronic points. I'm telling you, there is some benefits to having old stuff and analog around. Because if they take down all the tech, then you'll still be able to shoot, move, and communicate. And you'd be surprised how much technology is in a newer vehicle. I've got a 2015 sitting out there that's got a bunch of tech in it. I didn't realize that was communicating back in 2015. They've been building this technology for years. And why you think it's great, the adaptive cruise control, the automatic headlights, the automatic windshield wipers, the parking assist, the lane assist, the rear camera, all of those things can be used as collection devices remotely, and you would never know it was turned on. It's basically a Swiss Army knife of technology and a security nightmare, because anybody can hack into that thing. It's super easy to do. And you would never know it was going. Just like your cell phone. So train to not have tech, train to have tech. And if you train to have tech, practice good security hygiene. Long passwords, complex passwords, turn off all the features you don't need, limit the amount of time you spend on it, limit the amount of places you take it. Don't take your cell phone everywhere. You don't need to take it everywhere. Don't sit on your cell phone and watch TikTok or watch Instagram. The rest of all the social media platforms are collecting on you, all of them. If you have a new car, your new car is collecting on you. If you have a smart TV, your smart TV is collecting on you. If you have an Alexa, you're fucked. If you have a Google helper, you're fucked. If you have Siri turned on, you're fucked. They're listening. And I have an iPhone, and I'm telling you, I can go in and turn off Siri 100 times, and that bitch will come back when I least expect it. Drives me nuts. But guess what? Smart means surveillance, monitoring, et cetera, et cetera. Wasn't designed for you. It was designed for the intelligence agencies. You have to think through all this stuff. And yeah, it's overwhelming at times. But remember, you're building the best bug in or bug out setup for you, not for anybody else, for you. And you know, you see that's my shop there. Sorry. My old Bronco that I had in the picture there for a while. There's a reason I have that. And part of it is I know that I can make that damn thing run no matter what. Even with, 100 mile an hour tape and baling wire, I get that son of a bitch to run long enough to get to some place to get out of the conflict zone. The point is, you have to think through all these different aspects. That's why I say make a list, go through your list, and do it by category if you have to. I mean, that I have a binder full of stuff that I've put together. Field sanitation, field hygiene, and how to go through and sanitize water. I actually watch Troop's video. I watch his videos every so often. I mean, the guy's a wealth of knowledge on a variety of topics. Just like if you talk to Matt Everett, the guy's a wealth of technology when it comes to, he's a wealth of knowledge when it comes to radios. And Chris is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to tactics. Bracken knows a lot about just about everything too. And that's why the sphere of influence is so important in these situations, is that you can't do it all. You have to leverage other people. And you have to leverage your community for skill sets. And this is the Achilles heel of the elite. And I want you to take this in, because at some point, this will be the tipping point for the whole world. See, the elite bank on the fact that there's always going to be a worker class that's willing to support them and do the things that they don't know how to do. These people don't know how to do shit. They don't know how to build anything. They don't know how to fix anything. They don't know how to create anything. All they create is bullshit. This group is builders. We're the builder class. We know how to do things. We can turn a wrench. We can fix a pipe. We can do things that they can't do. Eventually, that will come back to roost. I think I see Joe out there. Is that you, Joe, Tactical Wisdom? If it is, man, love your book. I just read a bunch out of it. So thanks for jumping on, bud. There's your guy right there. Well, my point of saying all this tonight, and the reason why I'm talking about this, is I got barraged with questions after we did the technical overview. And then last week we were talking about the technology and how technology is used to influence the young. Awesome. Thanks for jumping on, Joe. The reason why we talk the tech piece of this is that tech is insidious for a lot of different reasons, and people don't look at it with caution or pause. And it's also our Achilles heel. A lot of people do not understand technology. They don't understand what it's being used for. They don't understand why it's being used. They don't understand why all these modern conveniences are there and can be used against you. So, sweet. Hook Cold, was that the new logo or was that the fucked up logo? Because I got the retard shirt today that I ordered. It took like 4 weeks to get here. I have to give Spreadshirt. I have to give Spreadshirt the benefit of the doubt because they did make it right. And, they fixed the logo. They credited, if you got a shirt and your shirt was wrong, you can call and they'll give you a credit and you could rebuy the shirt. I rebought a polo today and I sent a shirt to Christy for helping me with the logos. In fact, we're going to have a white and a black logo. I loaded the green and the blue logos today. So as soon as I get those, I'll upload those too. So you'll have a variety of logos to choose from. So it won't just be the gold, although I think the gold and the green are badass, just like the gold and the blue is badass. Not that I'm a Navy fan. Get that shit out of your head, Spud, because I know you're thinking Navy. Just the color of the shirt looks good. But I'm glad you got your shirt. I'm glad that I'm glad all that worked out, because I was stressed about it. I was incensed and pissed off and beyond, you know, consoling at some points because I was so mad. But it's fixed. Things are going in the right direction, so that's good. But the reason why I'm talking about all these different topics tonight is I'm answering questions, and we'll talk more on Wednesday. And if, like I said, if you haven't read the books these guys have written, especially Clay, you know, Clay Martin's books and Matt Bracken's books, you should, because I got through Joe's first book and his second book, and I'm telling you, it's a good refresher. And I hadn't read it in a while, so just like I haven't read Matt's books in a while. And Matt goes into excruciating detail at times, but I will tell you, Matt's first book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, the guys he outlines as ATF agents, I'm telling you, that fits, that is a profile that fits the ATF to a fucking T in Washington, D.C. to a T, and some of the FBI agents I worked with. It was startling when I reread it that the second time through I caught it. So, and Matt Everett's book on the Biofang radios and ComSec, you should read it. It's like I said, there's a difference between understanding how things work and knowing how to use that equipment. That is where the rubber meets the road. So it's worthwhile to spend the time doing it. And then the other piece is, when we do the roundtables, that's your opportunity to throw questions into the chat for us to get to. Like last week, Tree Girl, she put in, hey, talk about how you think the martial law is going to develop, right? And we all have our view of how that's going to go. And like any other discussion, we go round and round about it. But usually we get to a place where everybody's got a viewpoint. That's why I asked about the go, no-go decision last week, right? Because I was getting a bunch of questions around that. And that is, you know, what is my go, no-go? What should my go, no-go decision be to leave my house if I'm bugging in? And really the question boils down to, what's the imminent threat? If there's an imminent threat to you and your family and you have to leave, then leave. And if there's an imminent threat in your community, then you basically read the tea leaves and get out early enough so you don't get caught in a wave. If you're on a main freeway or off a main freeway, if you're on a side route, like a state route that nobody ever goes on, you're probably good. But if you're on just off Interstate 5, I-17, I-10, yeah, I can tell you that most people, if they're on foot, they're going to be traveling the freeways. I don't know why that is. I don't know why people think that's a good idea, but they do. And if there's a mass displacement and you're off that freeway line, you're going to have to make some very, very tough decisions. And one of the other things that I caught the second time through Joe's first book is he talks about how we're all taught to be charitable. And in a, you know, without the rule of law, you can't be charitable. Because if you give somebody food one day, the next day they show up with a friend, the next day after they show up with another friend, and then pretty soon there's four or five guys and there's enough to take what you have. And he goes through a couple of scenarios. And it's that kind of thinking that I had completely forgotten about, because it's easy once you get immersed in this, doing this show and thinking through all the different scenarios and topics, and it's easy to lose focus on that, lose the peripherals, right? But the books and training will give you the peripherals that you don't have now. And that's worth its weight in gold and will be worth its weight in gold. So the thing, you know, hopefully by now you're starting to see the bigger picture is that there's a lot of different places where you can focus your attention and focus your attention on the things that you're deficient in, but also remember you have a community and you can leverage those skills around you. So that's why sphere of influence is so important, as you build those skill sets. Like, think about what you bring to the fight. If you can grow food, fix things, you can work with water, you can do field medicine, all those things matter. And at some point, if depending on how bad things get, if you have to barter, then you have something to barter. You can barter a skill for food or for some kind of a currency or for items, or you can trade. That's why we've been talking about having a barter system in your community, especially in your sphere of influence. Like Troop and I, we don't exchange money. We trade each other for things that we need. Like if he needs firearm stuff done, he knows he just comes over here and just drops stuff off. And just, if I need medical stuff, I go over and talk to him. If I need medical advice, I go over and talk to him, right? Because he knows the field medicine aspect of it. Just like if I need to talk hardcore shooting, I'll call Conrad. or, you know, one of the other guys. If I'm talking tactics, I've got guys in the group I could call. That's what I'm talking about. You don't have to know it all. Dude, Spud, if you're a blacksmith, dude, I'm telling you, you are going to be a very popular dude, especially if you can craft horseshoes and bend metal. And I'm telling you, you're going to be a very popular dude. Just like welding. If you're a welder, you're going to be a very popular person. It's those skill sets the elite don't have. That is our ace in the hole. That is what negates technology. Because when you think about it, at some point the batteries and the tech will run out if this goes on long enough. And they can have all the high-tech shit they want, but they're never going to have enough of it. And that's the piece where good old-fashioned brute force and ignorance can do a lot more than you think. And it can give you a lot of advantages you don't even think through right now. There's a lot of aspects to this that, and why I'm saying this is really simple. We always underestimate our enemy, but they always underestimate us. And thinking outside the box is something that we've forgotten how to do. That's something that while you're going through these exercises of going through your gear, figuring out what you need, bartering for services, bartering for different skills, you can start thinking outside the box to solve problems. And that really is, at the end of the day, is the crux of the exercise, thinking outside the box. But it's also about community and building a community of people that you can trust when the chips are down. And you have to be able to cut people loose that can't cut it, especially in a contingency situation or when the rule of law evaporates. You cannot have somebody in your inner circle that is paralyzed by fear, paralyzed by, just say noise, it's the best way to say it. They will betray you. And that's why I've said all along, you're going to have to make some very, very hard decisions when all this kicks off. Because the situation that we're walking into is going to be very unpredictable at times. And you can't for 1 minute underestimate your enemy. You cannot. And you can't take for granted that everybody with you can't be compromised. They all can be. And it could be for a variety of reasons. You would be surprised. I saw some really outlandish things happen in Iraq when the fuel ran out, when they couldn't get potable water. I saw people do all kinds of desperate things. You can never underestimate what stress does to somebody, what a situation that unpredictable or ambiguity does to people. You'll see people lose their minds when the situation's so ambiguous that they just cannot function. I'm telling you, you're going to see it. And it'll be family members. It'll be friends. It'll be people you think are just rock solid. They will surprise you. And you will have to make decisions. Not saying it's all going to happen this year. Not say it's going to happen at all, but I'm giving you at least a framework to start looking at the bigger picture and making decisions and evaluating the people around you. Because look, all of us have bias, right? We have people we care about. We have people that we trust. We have people that have been in our lives forever that are, you know, salt of the earth. You can never, ever anticipate what somebody's going to do in any given situation. And the hardest part of all of this is if things get as bad as they possibly could, you'll have to make decisions you've never made before. And you have to be prepared to make those decisions. And that's as much about getting your head right and getting right with God as it is about being in shape and being in physical, having the physical stamina and the mental stamina. All of that boils down to getting mentally prepared. Everybody's got to do that individually. And you talk to any combat vet, any of them, they will tell you the same thing. That when you're preparing to go in country or go outside the wire, you tell yourself literally 2 to 3 things. And the first one is, does everybody around me that I care about know how I feel about them? Are all of my affairs taken care of? So if I get smoked, my kids, my wife, my family can go on. And then third and most importantly, am I right with God? And those are the three common things you hear. And guys will joke and you know, there's some ego attached to it, but it all boils down to the same thing. And I look at it, I look at the situation that's ahead of us, and I think, you know, the one thing I'm not prepared for is the field medicine side of the house. Because I'm not prepared for there not to be 911 responders or a medevac helicopter to call. And, you know, those skills of mine are atrophied. And, I haven't done field hygiene for a very, very long time, just like a lot of people haven't. So those are the things I'm thinking through right now. But I'm also thinking through, how do I get to my family? How do I get to the people here if they're isolated? And we're in the midst of a conflict zone. I'm thinking through all of that right now. And you should be too. Because I can tell you, in a conflict zone, 2 miles is the longest fucking distance in the world when you're under fire. A city block is a long fucking ways. And if somebody's 1,000 miles away, they might as well be on a different planet. So this mindset that you're just going to, you know, jump in a car and drive 1,000 miles. You could hit checkpoints. You could hit ambushes. You could hit bad roads or washed out roads. There's a variety of things that could happen to you along the way, and you would never make it there. You could jump in an airplane, have an engine failure and crash, or have to be forced down. Then you're on foot and you're having to walk the rest of the way. You got what you got. And let me tell you, 1,000 miles, you do 20 miles a day, do some math there. How many months is that going to take you to walk? And you're going to have to probably walk it through a bunch of hostile territory. It's thinking clearly about the situation around you and making good decisions that's going to keep you alive. But the other side of that is accepting the things you can do and the things you can't do and being realistic about the things you can and can't do. And you have to check your ego at the door. You know, the hardest thing for me as an officer when I got on the ground was look at my NCOs and go, all right, I'm not exactly sure what the fuck we're doing here or why we're here, but we're here and this is what we're going to do. Because they're looking at me like, sir, what are we going to do? You get these ambiguous orders from headquarters to go to a certain position and hold a certain position. You don't know why the fuck you're there. You don't even know what the fuck you're doing there. But you're there. Okay, we're going to set up a perimeter. Let's do this. Let's do that. Here's our call sign. Everybody know how to call a medevac? Yes, sir, we do. And, you know, you rehearse and you do things like actions on contact, actions mounted, actions dismounted on contact. Those things and you rehearse so that when it happens, your muscle memory takes over. That's part of getting your head right, is building the muscle memory so you react and your head catches up with you. Because that's usually how it goes. But the biggest part of all of this today, if you hear me say anything, hear this. Lose the fucking fear. It doesn't serve you any purpose. And the moment that you succumb to fear, you die. If you can keep a calm head, even when things go completely turn to shit, you'll have a good chance of getting out of it. But you have to think clearly, you have to make sound decisions, and you have to get in the right headspace. But if you panic, you're done. And so is everybody else with you. And I guarantee you that most of the people listening to me right now have people they care about that are depending on you. So get your head right. Because the next several weeks are going to be very chaotic. If they develop the way I think they're going to develop, things are going to be very chaotic. step away from the noise. Step out of the emotional space. Get out of the emotional space completely if you can. Don't get wrapped up in narratives, politics, or BS. It doesn't matter. National level politics doesn't matter. Global politics doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is what you can see, touch, and feel. Everything else is noise. And even cooperation by people around you. Story changes 6-7 times just in a, you know, 5 people. Be the calmest person in the room. Be the person that unites your community. Be the person that leads the way. Be that person. National unity is going to start at the smallest local level, and it's going to build from there. All of you have to be those ambassadors for unity. And it's going to be really fucking hard when you start talking to liberals. But you got to be able to turn away from people and forget them and walk away and move on to the next person. What we're entering into is going to be chaotic. There's going to be a lot of ambiguity, and there's going to be a lot of unknowns. Wade through it with a calm head, a good network of people you can trust, and be methodical. That's the only thing you can do. Slow is smooth, smooth is fast. Keep that. Because what's coming at us is going to be unknown for a lot of people, including me. I have no idea how this situation is going to develop. But I can feel just like the rest of you that something's coming. Be ready for it. And be as prepared as you can. Take advantage of the time you have now. And live your life. Get out of the news cycle. Get out of the narrative cycle. And live your life. God bless everyone. I'll be back Wednesday and Thursday with the roundtable. And it'll be at 4 o'clock Pacific time, 7 o'clock Eastern, both nights. God bless. We'll see you then. One team, one fight.